Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. This is the number one daily radio show for realtors looking for a no BS, authentic, real-time coaching experience. What's really working in today's market, how to generate more leads, make more money, and have more time for what you love in your life. And now your hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
Welcome back. Today's podcast is Don't Lose the Listing, Top 10 Must Avoid Silly Mistakes that a lot of agents, even the experienced veteran agents, will make that will cause them to lose the listing. So, Julie, what inspired you for today's podcast?
Well, you know, I think most agents are buyer-centric and take listings now and then. And I think that that's gotten worse with fewer homes for sale. There's been fewer people wanting to list. So that just makes the skills deficit that much deeper. And I get a lot of these questions either after an agent doesn't take a listing for some silly reason, and you know our coaching clients are all trained to find out in the unlikely event that that happens to them, to call the seller and ask why. And each of all of these 10, and there's probably more than 10, but all of these 10 can be an answer. And sometimes you fall into the trap of doing more than one of these blunders, and then you end up walking away not with the listing.
Now, let's be clear. A lot of the things that you're about to hear aren't things that you'll necessarily hear from a seller as far as feedback as to why you didn't get the listing. But the other agent who didn't make any of these blunders took the listing because they didn't make any of these blunders. And a lot of this stuff you're going to hear is really kind of, you know, unquantifiable in the sense that the seller won't say, well, you know, I like Julie better than I like Bob for this reason. Well, you're going to learn in point number four, it's because when Julie walked in the house and it was a house, a no shoes house where no one wears shoes, Julie was conscientious enough to take her shoes off where Bob didn't, right? That little thing, a seller's never going to actually say it's because Julie took her shoes off. It was just because Julie showed a sign of respect in taking her shoes off. So a lot of these little finite points are the difference between you being successful as a listing agent and you not being successful as a listing agent. I want to start out with this one requirement for all of you. Do not ever, and Julie just touched on this, don't ever lose a listing and then not know why, or even worse, make it so that you are somehow a victim of the other agent or something else. Like the other agent overpriced it. The other agent, you know, listed for a lower commission. The other agent was their, you know, their cousin. No, you lost the listing because the seller did not feel that you were the best choice to represent them in the sale of their home. It's your fault, not the markets, not the interest rates, not the seller, not your competition, your fault. You got to start out with that mindset. That way you'll be open to improving, to never allowing, you know, the idea that you only take 50% of the listings you go on. And people say that. There's a lot of coaches and trainers out there that say the average for the, you know, average agent goes on 10 listing appointments, takes five. That's terrible. I mean, if Zoe came home, you know, with a straight 50% on all of her grades, you know, Fs basically, you think I'm going to say, well, that's okay.
That's normal.
Yeah. No, that's not normal. If you're not taking, and I'll tell you what our bar is, every single listing appointment you're going on, you're making a mistake. You have to have success 100% of the time. Now, will that, you know, is that sustainable? Maybe you lose one, but if you have the mindset that you're going to take every single one you go on, you're going to probably do that 9 out of 10 versus the idea that, well, it's okay, I take some, I lose some, and the universe wasn't delivering to me, the blah, blah, blah. Don't accept that.
Well, look at how much more seriously you take it if your personal standard is to win 100% of the time.
Can you imagine a Navy SEAL who's basically saying, well, you know what, 50% of the time I aim, I shoot, I kill.
We'll see how it goes.
But if not, well, whatever. It's all good.
No.
No.
But I mean, think about it. You could give lots of examples. Your airline pilot, your surgeon, even the vet. You know, we'll see how it goes. Win some, you lose some.
Michael Phelps, yeah, it's another damn Olympics. But listen, I'll win, you know, half the time. What difference does it make? You know, exactly. You guys get it? Why is this sort of this ingrained, innate acceptance of being less than average so common in society nowadays? It's crazy. So your minimum standard is to take all listing appointments you always go on, always become your active listings. If one gets by you occasionally, learn from it. Yes. Don't just accept it.
Correct course, right?
Exactly.
Now, this list is silly mistakes that every single person listening can correct. And we're going to talk about those. This goes hand in hand with a podcast we did last week called the 7-Step Listing Process and a core part of our coaching practice. So that makes some assumptions. But these are the silly things to fix.
And remember, as always, if you want the full notes from today's podcast, in addition to a lot of other extra really fun content we're creating, you have to subscribe to HarrisRealEstateDaily.com. HarrisRealEstateDaily.com is your daily newsletter that includes all of our show notes, our latest podcasts, and also exclusive interviews, scripts, objection handlers, and it is free. So just go to HarrisRealEstateDaily.com. It takes you 2 seconds to sign up. All you have to do is put in your email address. And also remember, it is a double opt-in scenario, so you are then going to have to confirm in your email that you want the newsletter, and you'll start receiving HarrisRealEstateDaily.com right away. For the thousands of you that have already signed up, we certainly appreciate your supporting of our latest art project.
Yes, thank you for that. It certainly is. Okay, so on to the potential disastrous blunders that are all fixable. Number one, show up on time. Being fashionably late doesn't apply to real estate appointments. Arrive early to show that you're not just on time, but ahead of the game. And something that I think people that live in big cities probably already know this, but something I've noticed about NAF, when you're going someplace, let's say it's a house, you're not that familiar with the neighborhood, you kind of know how to get there, and the night before you're preparing and you ask your navigation or your maps app, how long does it take to get from here to there? Well, do you know that it's calculating based on right now traffic versus when you get up in the morning, you've got a 10 o'clock appointment, you need to recalibrate that because it could be 20 minutes longer, an hour longer if you live in Chicago or LA.
So when you open the door, when you knock on the door, when you showed up early, not on time, the first thing we want you to say when the seller opens the door, and you can edit this ever so slightly, but say, Mr. Seller, before I take another step in your door, I just want you to know I'm 100% committed to getting this home sold. Why are we asking you to make a statement like that? Because it is a declarative statement describing to them what the experience with you is going to be like, and it's also going to set the expectation that you have high levels of energy and enthusiasm, which we're going to talk about how critically important that is. Point number two, Julie.
Thank you for that reminder. Definitely. Point number two, parking prowess. Don't play driveway dominoes with the homeowner's car.
Did you write that or ChatGPT write that?
I had a little help with that one.
I did sound like Julie.
I know, but it does make the point, right? So park on the street, allowing them to come and go without vehicular obstacle course. Maybe their teenage kid is coming home and needs to do a quick turnaround. Don't create an obstacle. Don't create an awkwardness. You don't have to do that. So just park in the street.
Julie is using ChatGPT finally. It's taking
As an assistant.
It's taken me a long time to get her to do it. But still, it seems to take her longer to write outlines now than it did before. Well, it's because you're having too much fun with ChatGPT coming up with slayings like driveway dominoes.
I know. It makes it more fun.
Here, I'll tell you how we learned that originally. Julie and I obviously sold real estate for about 10 years between 100 and 200 homes. Per year. And I remember when we were learning, you know, dumb mistakes, we parked in the driveway. It was a more expensive listing.
Yep.
And the seller who was the male, you know, he was late coming home, had obviously when we walked in the front door, a bad day, didn't really say anything, just gave us the side eye, sat down, sort of just like went through the obviously emotionally painful experience of having to talk about selling his house, whole thing. And then, like, Julie and I, we never emotionally connected with him. She was plenty fine, and fortunately, she was the decision maker, so we ended up taking the listing. But then we realized why he was kind of not very connecting with us. It's because they had a big-ass front yard, probably like a half acre, and he ended up having to park in the street, and it was raining.
Yeah.
Because we had parked him out, and there was, his kid's car was blocking the driveway, blocking the garage, the whole thing. That was stupid on our part. We should have been more conscientious. We should have been the ones walking in the rain and been more considerate of the seller. Now, you're going to say, well, how did you know that he wasn't home already? We didn't, but the point was, is we never parked in the driveway, especially in our listing appointment after that.
Err on the assumption that somebody's wanting to come home and they want to park in their garage and they need the driveway. It's very simple.
Or someone can park you in and now you're having to leave and you're having to play, you know, driveway dominoes on the way out. Just it's a little bit of a, you know, disrespect of the seller.
Yeah, and you're creating an objection that doesn't need to be there. Okay, point number three, strive for handshake harmony. Aim for a handshake that's just right. Here's ChatGPT again, akin to Goldilocks' porridge, just right. It should be neither too strong, avoid being a bone crusher, or too weak, no limp fish impressions, please. I'll tell you, I met an older kid at Zoe's school a couple of days ago. She was probably like 12 or 13, and I was so impressed with her. She introduced herself first. She said, like, hi, my name is Katie. I guess you're Zoe's mom. What's your name? And I'm like, well, that's interesting. Somebody's trained this kid. And she sticks her hand out to handshake, and she just gives a nice little, you know, professional handshake. And I thought, you know, that's a great skill to teach a kid. And how many adults don't do that?
Okay, so let's give her, let's give the juxtaposition to the way our daughter sometimes behaves, at least around us. So there is somebody who's organized, what was it? Not a manners class, but what is it? An etiquette class, right? So someone has organized an etiquette class that a lot of the little kids are going through. And Zoe's reaction when Julie told her was, yuck, that sounds a lot like manners.
Exactly.
That's what she said.
To which I said, and you've just demonstrated why you're going to have to go. Okay, so point number four, house rules, no shoes. If you spot a shoe tray by the door, it's a sign to slip off your kicks. Respect their floors and you'll be walking on sunshine.
And actually, there's a little part of our listing process. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a gimmick, but it's a really good gimmick. Have a basket. This is after you take the listing for the when the showings start happening. Have a basket, a little, you know, kind of Easter eggy basket sitting outside the front door with a bunch of shoe covers rolled up and rubber bands with notes under the rubber bands and a note attached to the basket that says, please remove your shoes to protect the floors that might someday be yours. And that is, again, something when you show that to a seller that you're going to ask, especially if it's a no shoes house, they're instantly going to love you just because of that one little gimmick. But also think of the impression that leaves on the prospective buyers that the seller's that particular about the house, mm-hmm. even though they're moving out of the house. Little tiny things get the listing.
It's such a, I mean, it's a little thing that's a big thing. And you can take a picture of that and have a standalone page that goes in your listing presentation to make a point of difference. It is a sign of respect. Some of you guys are figuring out, like, how do I get that? Well, you can order shoe covers. They're just medical shoe covers on Amazon.
We talk about, this is all part of our premier coaching program. I mean, some of these things you guys are going, wow, that's a really simple, great idea. Won't cost a lot of money.
Yeah, but think if you screw that up and you don't notice or you just don't feel like taking your shoes off and you mark up their floors that they just vacuumed for you to show up.
Imagine showing that to a prospective seller in a listing appointment, a picture of your basket and explain to them, you know, the whole psychology behind it. That little tiny thing, I promise you, makes all the difference when a seller is, because sellers don't really know what questions to ask agents when they're interviewing them. But these are all the things we teach you in Premier Coaching. If you're not yet enrolled in Premier Coaching, you can do so right now. Just go to premiercoaching.com, premiercoaching.com, or the link to join is also below in the show description. Premiercoaching.com is something that will be the next natural step for all of you, no matter where you are in your real estate career. I have noticed a huge increase in teams and brokers that are putting their agents in Premier Coaching because their agents obviously are slow to adapt without Premier Coaching to this new market, especially given all the new rules and the laws and all the rest of it. So it is a perfect fit, whether you're a new agent, whether you're a seasoned veteran agent, whether you have a team. Let us take on the burden of preparing you and your staff for this new market, premiercoaching.com. It's free to join for the first 30 days. So we've removed all excuses. We've removed all fear. Just go to premiercoaching.com. It is the next natural step for your progression, your real estate career.
All right, point number five, or blunder number five, enthusiasm is infectious. Energy and enthusiasm. Bring your A game with that energy and enthusiasm. When touring the home, be positive and complimentary. And I would say a related blunder under this category is when agents overdo it on trying to coach somebody on the staging of their house.
Huge mistake.
Huge mistake. Now, you think you're doing them a favor, but you know, nobody really likes to be told what to do. And maybe that sofa that you said needs to go, or you need to put that in the basement, maybe that's like their favorite thing to, you know, lounge around in at night, and you've just kind of inadvertently offended them.
Julie just said something really important. She said three different things. I'm going to break it down to a single point. Your job is not to be the home stager. Your job is not to be the mortgage professional. Your job is not to be the home inspector. Your job is to basically get the listing. And as soon as you start meandering into these other things, just because you think you're an expert at placing furniture, you're going to offend them. Something about something you say, they're not going to agree with. Whereas the next agent who's more experienced came in and said, oh, I love everything. It's great. By the way, my home inspector or my home stager is going to come in afterwards. You guys get it? Because that agent who is more experienced knew that their job was to take the listing. And if there were condition issues, the home stager would point it out. And then essentially the home stager would be the bad guy, not you.
Yeah.
That goes especially when there's, you know, tchotchke collections. If you're in Texas, heads on the wall. I mean, not human heads,
mounts,
but, you know,
mounts,
sorry. Mounts, right. But that is
human heads.
Yeah, no. Well,
hopefully not.
No, that's good not grief. Good, right? Yeah, but mouths, you know, Julie and I are from Ohio, and there was a lot of people that were, you know, Anglophiles, so you'd see a lot of things like ancient dishes on the walls, all kinds
swords.
Of things. So yeah, swords.
Yeah, over the mantle. That was like a den thing.
Oh, because it was from the war. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Anyway, you guys get the point. So your job is to take the listing, have a home stager come in afterwards. How are you going to pay for the home stager? Pay for the home stager with the proceeds from the closing. Have a stager agree to do not every time will you have to do this. Julie and I reserve this for the upper end listings, frankly. And we would have somebody come in and we would have them – we write down all the things that we knew had to be fixed on the house. And we wouldn't tell the seller. We'd pass those notes to the home stager. Home stager would be one of the incentives for the seller to want to do business with us. Home stager would come in, obviously give the seller a list of things to do, tell us what they told the seller what to do, and then the stager would get paid off the proceeds from closing. That's the way we paid for it.
Well, and that's if that's a bigger staging bill. A lot of stagers will offer an hour or two of basic coaching and checklists and things like that, which costs you a lot less. Kind of depends on the price of the house and the condition of the house.
How would we pay for it? Ultimately, not from commission. Julie and I, and you all should do this as well, would charge a processing fee to both the buyers and the sellers. And the processing fee originally was $300, then it raised to $500, then we started charging $1,000. That's how we would do it. And you can do the same thing and offset virtually all your hard costs when it comes to taking a listing. Julie, point number – but you know what? Energy and enthusiasm.
Yes.
That point number five, that really is the number one rule for anything in life.
Well, it is because, you know, contrast that with if you screw it up like you were just talking about. If you overcoach them that they've got to do all these things, you're creating stress in that appointment and they now want to get away from you.
So if you have a choice, dear listener, between having great energy and enthusiasm or being an absolute market expert, knowing every little analytical detail that's ever been known to man about that house, about that market, blah, blah, blah. Energy and enthusiasm will win the game every single day, even when the seller's a super nerd who loves the analytical information. They're always going to be attracted to the energy and enthusiasm. They're going to interpret, and everybody wants to feel energy and enthusiasm. And the sellers are going to choose to list with the agent that has the energy and enthusiasm, even if they don't have the skill or the experience, because they love that feeling of energy and enthusiasm. They want to have that in their lives. That's the reason people do things like, you know, sports, or they go watch movies that make them feel a certain way. Everyone wants to feel that sense of really being alive, that sort of energy that comes from excitement, those types of things, that energy, really. I'm saying the same word over and over. Hopefully you understand. So bring that to the table when you're conversing with anybody, not just buyers and sellers, and you'll be shocked and amazed how frequently that will attract every single personality type. Every single, you know, doesn't matter how buttoned up they are, they're all going to want to be attracted to you because you make them feel fantastic.
Yes, and that's extra good news for new or newer agents who are naturally nervous. If you can convert that nervous energy into positive energy and enthusiasm, you're going to win. Even if somebody a bit more skilled than you are goes in there with a different approach.
Well, when Julie and I sold over 100 homes our first year, and we have a lot of coaching clients that have done this as well, with no experience, looking like we were about 12.
Yeah.
And we still had listings that we were taking against some of the most expensive or most experienced agents in the marketplace. Why would the sellers list with us? Well, they would literally tell us because so-and-so showed up late. Because so-and-so had no energy and enthusiasm. Because so-and-so didn't look very professional.
They were assumptive.
They were assumptive. They were kind of arrogant. The perceptions of all these bad, you know, attributes versus you guys showed up on time. You had lots of energy and enthusiasm. I believed that you would sell my house because of the energy and enthusiasm you had that would be, you know, hopefully parlayed into more excitement on behalf of the prospective buyer. That type of thinking is what – I mean, there are no downsides that are assigned to you. No negative attributes that are assigned to you when you have great levels of energy and enthusiasm, but all kinds of negative attributes assigned to you if you're low level. Well, I'm just analytical. I'm just kind of slow talking and kind of mumble, and that's just who I am. And I guess I just won't be able to, you know, I'll do blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, if that's how you're thinking, then don't be surprised if you have a very limited real estate career.
Yes, and it is fixable too, by the way. Coaching, yes. We can help you. Okay, point number six, and there's a whole lot wrapped up in this because this touches on DISC personality styles and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Which we've talked about endlessly in Premier Coaching. So if you're wanting to learn more about DISC personality style, guess what? You can take the test for free. It's in the first level of Premier Coaching. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. It's awesome.
We never remember.
And we do it with even elite coaching clients do that as well.
Yeah. So make sure when you join Premier Coaching, you take the DISC personality test. You do not have to pay for it. It is free, included in the first level of Premier Coaching. go to premiercoaching.com. Point number six.
Seating strategy. It's the great debate. Dining room table or kitchen table? Should you sit at the head of the table or let somebody else? Let them call the shots and take the seat that feels like home sweet home to them. Avoid the awkwardness and just ask where they usually sit. Driver personalities, beware of this point. Some people coach that no matter what, you should take the head of the table. But what if it's you versus the driver, you know, in the relationship? It gets awkward. What is your take on that? Because this is kind of a great debate. There's different ways to look at this.
Well, honestly, the easy button is always look for the round table in the kitchen, which always seems to be there.
Yes, that's like a peacekeeping move.
Exactly. It's a peacekeeping move because people love those round tables in kitchens. I mean, true. We have one, you know. Yeah. So that's the move. Just sit there. I will definitely – here's what you don't do. You don't sit at the dining room table. For
if you
sure.
can avoid it, unless they go there.
But even if they do go there, don't go there. Ask them to sit someplace else where it's a little bit more intimate. Mm-hmm. Direct them to sit at a smaller environment. Here's the problem with the dining room table. It's awkward for them. They only use it two or three times a year. There's no sense of like, it's just a different environment. It's more formal, right? You guys understanding?
Yeah, it's awkward.
You don't want to be at that environment. All the important conversations happen around the kitchen table, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the other big mistake is don't go to the like the Barco lounge room, right?
Oh, I used to hate that.
Don't go to the couches. Don't go to the chairs. Yeah. Don't go to some place where people are just going to be formally sitting around and, you know, where they go to drink beer or whatever the hell they do.
That's,
you know,
too informal.
Right. So you want to go to the kitchen table. That way it's hopefully not as big. Maybe it's a 4 or 5 seater and, you know, you can have these conversations. And I'll tell you, this is the main thing. This is kind of, I mean, I'll tell you the words and hopefully you understand. What you don't want to have happen is you don't want to be sitting in opposition to the sellers. You don't want to be sitting literally across the table. Think about that. Psychology will always tell us that when you sit across the table, that is you in opposition to the other person. That means they are never going to feel connected to you because you are in opposition to them. So to answer Julie's question, if you have to sit at a square or rectangle table, what I'll always do, and this is the move we always made, is try to determine who the decision-making adult is when it comes to hiring a listing agent. And I'll give you, you know, crib notes on that. Sometimes I'd say 50% of the time, it's going to be the man who thinks he's the decision maker about who they're going to hire as a listing agent. But it's almost always the wife, assuming, you know, it's a man and a woman, right? You're always going to have a situation where if it's a male dominant household, where the man is going to be, you know, sitting in the main position, and then the woman's going to sit beside him. But remember, if you can choose who you're going to have sit next to you, I'm giving you advanced coaching here. Always choose who you have determined to be the decision maker. And by the way, if you can't figure it out, it's almost always the woman. That was the punchline of what I was trying to tell you. Now, all of us have dominant sides of our bodies. If you're right-handed, chances are it's your right side. You're stronger on that side. You see better on that side. You hear better on that side. You lean into the right side. Most of you do. Just in life in general. Like when Julie and I go on our walks, she always stands to my right side. There's, you know, different reasons why, because that's her left side is her dominant side. So you got to just be thinking all this through and think about where your natural energy flows. I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of my skis, but okay. These are all, you know, those of you who have been successful listing agents and you do this naturally and you haven't really thought about it. Well, this is why. And then next to you, again, you don't want to sit in opposition to people. Next to you, put the person who you feel is to be the decision maker. And then the secondary person, assuming there's two, have that person be next to them. That way you can present primarily to the primary decision maker and bond with them at a higher level. Now, I'm going to, you know, meander into working with buyers. If you're working with buyers and you're, you know, having them in the car with you, follow that same advice. Have the dominant person be in the passenger seat and have the less dominant person be in the back seat. And again, this is all part of our buyer agency training program. And have the backseat buyer give them something to do so that they don't feel left out. And that could be long form MLS forms that they're going to be looking at as far as like MLS printouts from the houses you're going to be showing them, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to start talking about buyers now. The point is that where you sit at a table, the main thing is don't sit in opposition to the sellers. Try to avoid the dining room and do not be sitting in overly casual environments, because in overly casual environments, they're going to be used to kicking their feet up and not having serious conversations.
True.
Okay. And the dining room table, it's too formal. So head for the kitchen table if at all possible. Always all these little steps make an enormous difference. I'm going to say this too.
Mm-hmm.
So back when you were at the front door, I want you guys to think through this. Knock, knock, knock. Take one step back. You don't want to rush the, you know, you don't want to have the seller think you're going to rush in on the door. you know, when they open the door. So take a step back, maybe two steps back. If you're a big person, you know, you better be taking that into consideration. If they look through the people or the camera and see you, and all they see is this mountain of a human, be more considerate when you're, you know, dominating the space, right? These are all little points. So when they open the door, look to see if they're not wearing shoes. Now, when Julie and I sold real estate, whether there was a no shoes house or not, we always took our shoes off, right? Now, if the house was a pigsty, which occasionally you'll come across, leave your shoes on, maybe consider putting on a hazmat suit.
Yes.
But the moral of the story is definitely look to see what the shoes rule is. Then, but remember, before you take another step in the door, when they open the door, with energy and enthusiasm, say, Mr. Seller, before I take another step into your house, I just want you to know I'm 100% committed to getting this home sold. Now, let's get started. And then you walk in. Now, you can also do that when you walk in the house. Either place is fine, wherever it works out for you. And then here's what I want you to do. You know, take the shoes off, probably going to be the best move, and then direct the seller to the dining or to the kitchen table. So let's go to your kitchen table so I can set my stuff down so you can take me on a tour of the house. Take control in a respectful, friendly, amiable way the second the door opens. Don't wait for the seller to direct you. They don't want to direct you. They want you to be in control. Mm-hmm. That's that all these little tiny psychological things are building confidence. You're not being too pushy. You're showing them that you know how to take control, not just of the experience of them, you know, listing the house with you, but when the house is actually listed with you, one of the biggest reasons they want to list with you is because they want someone that's in control that knows what the hell they're doing. And if you're all just amiable and you're like, oh, let's go out to the, you know, lanai and let's
hang out,
you know, hang out and, you know, look at the sunset and we'll talk about real estate here and there. No, you're not going to get the listing. You guys understanding where we're going here? I just fire hosed you with a bunch of information. And obviously we drilled down on this with a high level of intensity in Premier Coaching. But all this stuff matters. Point number seven.
Point number seven, hospitality acceptance. Here we are back at the table, perhaps. When life hands you water and cookies, say thank you and enjoy the treats. It's a small gesture that can make a big difference in building rapport. Maybe they just baked those cookies for you in anticipation you were coming over. And if you say, oh, no, thank you, you kind of inadvertently kind of hurt their feelings.
Well, 100%. So anytime they offer you anything, always say yes, thank you. And it's obviously the best horrible cookie you've ever tasted.
If they like it, you love it.
Now, obviously, there are going to be rules. If it's alcohol, as you will occasionally stumble across, maybe say, no, it's because I'm driving today. But,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
I tell you what, I'll bring a bottle of wine over when the house closes and we'll celebrate together.
And then you can still accept water.
Exactly. Yeah. Say stuff like that.
Exactly. Okay. Point number eight, gratitude is the attitude. Whether you clinch the listing or not, send a thank you card. It's like sprinkling gratitude confetti over your client's day, and you may be the only one who's that thoughtful. You're competing from the moment you set the appointment to the time they sign the agreement. We used to always do that.
Well, we'd send flowers. So on the more expensive listings, after we went on the appointment, if for some reason we did not get the contract signed at the time, well, whether we got the contract signed at the time or not, but our goal, just for the record, was always to get the contract signed, because chances are if you leave without the listing contract signed, you won't take the listing. When you leave, you lose, is the rule that Julie and I made for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But whether they, you know, occasionally you're going to have a reason why they can't, you know, sign the contract that particular night. And we teach you how to get it signed at the time you're meeting with them, after they've committed to listing with you. You know, leaving, again, without the paperwork signed is a sign of losing. But either when we did take the paperwork or didn't take the paperwork, we always sent flowers. We had an account with a local florist. They, you know, frankly, we only had to, you know, send them a quick text and they know what to do, an invoice at the end of every month. And here's some funny experiences we had as a result of that. We had sellers who were going to list. They didn't sign the contract with us. We left without the paperwork signed. We figured we weren't going to get the listing for whatever reason. And then we would send flowers. And then they would be so appreciative of the flowers we sent, they would list the house with us and tell us the reason they listed the house with us is because we sent them flowers and they were going to list with their best friend from high school, who also donated a damn kidney and the whole thing, you know. But
it's a good tiebreaker, really.
Exactly. Yeah. The tiebreaker was the flowers, and that's what won the day.
It is. It's a little thing. And we weren't sending, like, you know, huge $100 bouquets. These are just like a nice little statement that you could put on your kitchen counter. And it's a showing of gratitude for their time. And, you know, it's a good touch. All right. Number nine, this is a big one too, especially these days. No politics, please. Keep the conversation neutral, like Switzerland. Avoid political minefields and keep the focus on real estate, not debates. There's just really no place in a listing appointment for that.
Even if you live in a very partisan area, as fortunately or unfortunately most of the country is, do yourself a favor and avoid those conversations, because there's no natural way to go from winning their listing to talking about politics back to winning their listing. It's going to be an emotionally charged minefield. Julie and I, you know, what we coach all of our agents to do is be Republicrats, be a little bit of both. You know, don't talk one way or the other. Just avoid the conversation altogether.
Yes.
And again, we've been to the markets. We've been to San Francisco. We've been to these other markets where everybody wants to talk about politics except you. You can't offend anybody if you don't talk about politics.
That's right. You're not required to have an opinion on anything political.
Be a Republican.
Exactly. All right. Last but not least, number 10, dress for success. Dress to impress, erring on the side of a tad bit nicer than your prospects. Striking the perfect balance between professional and approachable attire is key. So if you're in a beach town and everybody runs around in flip-flops, you don't go to your listing appointment in flip-flops. Maybe you just wear loafers instead. You don't have to go full on, you know, suit and tie, but you should be at least respectful enough to be one notch nicer than whoever you're in front of.
Now, at the same time, if you're going on really expensive listings, you better sure as hell look nice.
Yes.
And I'll tell you guys a funny story. All these things you and I learned the hard way, mm-hmm. right? So we are going, when we are trying to break into this upper end market of New Albany. And again, at this point, we may have looked like we were 16 opposed to 12, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we were in our, I'd say late 20s at this point, and we were trying to list houses. We were going after a lot of expireds. That was our way to get into this more expensive market. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any market share. We didn't go, We had no social connections. It was a very, a lot of the people there, their kids all went to the same schools. They all ran in the same circles. Julie and I were completely out of the ordinary for this particular market.
Yes.
And so they were looking for reasons to disqualify us. But because we were going after the expireds, they had already listed with the local sort of inbred, in-bed agent.
Yes, and those, the predictable one.
And maybe some cases they had listed with two or three of them, and they hadn't, the country club agents, they had all failed. So they were willing to basically try out with these outsiders. So what they would do is, we get the appointment, we'd go out, and they would look us over. They would look for reasons to not want to list with us. We'd see them looking out the window to see what kind of car we drove. When we walked in the house, this is the experience I was wanting to share with you guys. I remember, we walked in the house and we knew our shoe rule at that point. The lady of the house looked down to see what kind of shoes Julie had that she'd just taken off.
Almost always in that market.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. And they would look to see what kind of watch you had. They would look to see all these types of things. These are just little virtue signaling things that letting them know that you're, part of their pack. It's no different than if you were living in rural North Carolina and, there's different ways that people show that they're all part of the same sort of extended community who share the same values and beliefs. It's silly, but it matters. And if you're wanting to know why, you're not taking listings, it's all these little things and more. Julie and I talk endlessly in Premier Coaching about all the little nuanced differences. Like, I had to hold myself back not talking to you guys about how to walk around the house with the seller and, ask assumptive closed questions. I had to, talk myself out of explaining the listing presentation. Our listing presentation, by the way, by the time you're at the seller's house, you should be out of the door with the contract signed within 30 minutes if you followed all the steps prior to getting the appointment. Pre-qualifying, setting the pre-listing pack, doing all the things. This is the process that all of you need to learn how to master to become very, very successful listing agents. And it's what's fantastic right now is we're coming out of an era where, frankly, sellers were not that picky. And by era, I mean like the last 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. Sellers were not that picky who they were going to list with because they knew the damn house was going to sell itself. That's still true, but to a lesser extent. So your opportunity to dominate in this market because of your skill set and some of the Jedi level things that we're just sharing with you, all these little things, even if you think they're trite or silly, the compounding effect of doing all of them makes a difference. And like I said, sellers aren't going to think that, they're not necessarily going to say, well, you know what? I really like that Julie because, when I offered her these cookies, she accepted them, whereas the other agent I was interviewing didn't, decline them because she said she was on a diet or something.
No, they'll just say, well, I seem to resonate with one agent more than the other. And we hit it off better.
But if you don't take a listing and you call the seller up and you say, well, we give you a little script, it's only three questions, but you're trying to find out why they didn't list with you, you're going to hear what they're going to say as I just felt more connected to the other agent. What the hell does that mean? It's all of these things. And so if you ask a seller, when you say you felt more connected to the other agent, they're not going to have an answer for you. They're just going to say, it's because they bonded more. It's because
they felt better about it.
Exactly. You guys get it? So you always remember, when you're in a listing presentation situation, the seller doesn't want you there. The seller does not want you in the house. The seller does not want to deal with you. They do not want the conflict that you inevitably are bringing, which is causing a lot of stress, which is getting rid of their home. The seller does not want to talk to you about price, condition, location, or commission. The seller wants you out of their house as fast as possible. And what do you do? What a lot of inexperienced agents do? You walk in there and you act like it's all about you. You don't show any respect whatsoever because you frankly don't know that you're not showing respect. You talk about yourself, your awards, your golden retriever. You try all this fake bonding. You think they like that? They don't. They want you the hell out of the house as fast as possible so they can get back to, watching Wheel of Fortune or whatever they do every
night. Yes, and it's also the reason they'll ask you to cut your commission, and they may consider listing with somebody that prices it higher. I'll never forget one of our recent coaching clients that came to us. He sent me an email. He said, I knew it was time to join coaching because my last listing appointment lasted 4 hours. He said, I ran out of things to talk about. I didn't have any direction. And at the end, my Hail Mary was reducing my commission and overpricing it in a desperate attempt to actually get their business. That didn't work. Now I know I need coaching.
Well, but the truth is, Julie, I don't know if you remember this, but when you and I first started selling real estate, we didn't know what the hell we were doing listing appointments.
No, of course not.
And the way we came into our process was because we got really good at setting pre-qualified listing appointments, proactive lead generation, that we started going on 2 and 3 listing appointments a day.
And we got more experience and we learned all of these things and we put it all together. And, the more you're out actually in the market, even if in the beginning you're not taking all of your listings, on your listing appointments. That's how you learn. We learned all this stuff. You talked about parking wrong,
A smart man learns from his mistake. A brilliant man learns from the mistakes of others. That really is the bottom line. That's the reason you need to get into coaching. So Julie and I, we created this process, really what we teach in Premier Coaching, but then we've honed it over the last, tens of thousands of coaching clients. We've made it better and better and better from the experience that they're having using the system that we originally created. This thing has evolved to the point now where you, as a brand new agent, even an agent who's maybe really experienced with working buyers but not so experienced with working sellers, you can plug into our 7-step listing process through Premier Coaching, and you can have that ratio of what we're talking about. At least have the expectation that you're going to take every single listing, and you will take every single listing when you follow our process at the highest level. And don't skip steps. Don't add anything. Don't remove anything. I know we're pressed for time. We have to get on another podcast. But when we are coaching agents and they go on a listing appointment and they don't take the listing, 100% of the time it's because they got complacent and they stopped doing one of the 7 steps. They stopped pre-qualifying. They stopped knowing if they were competing. They stopped sending the pre-listing pack. They edited the pre-listing pack and took out some of the pages. They didn't follow the listing process. They didn't do the Sharpie close. They didn't heed the advice of today's podcast. It's when they stop following the process that they start losing.
Yep.
So those of you in Premier Coaching, just follow the process exactly. Don't personalize it. Don't overthink it. Just make yourself follow the system and you will win. So in the meantime, guys, thank you for keeping this number one listen to daily podcast for real estate professionals in at least the United States. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk with you on the show tomorrow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.